here's my baggage with being on time. When I was 16, I got a job at Dominick's, and Dominick's is a grocery store here in Chicago. And my dad decided on the first day that my first day of work started at 5 p.m. He's like, you know what? We're taking the family to a water park. But Todd, I promise you, I'll have you back by 5 o'clock.
Oh, Grandpa.
Well, it turns out that I showed up at about, because the water park was in Rockford, which is about an hour away. I arrived at about 6:15 on my first day of the job.
Yeah.
So that is me unpacking why I don't like being late, because my boss is like, WTF, man, it's your first day.
Well, and it unpacks a lot about your dad.
Let's start unpacking my dad, sweetie.
So I have a funny story about Todd's dad. It's not really a funny story, but maybe this will be good for you guys too. Maybe this will be helpful. So Todd's dad's really interesting man. And I'll just leave it there. We have a lot of history, Todd's dad and I, and we actually get along great now. We really do. But his name is Alan. Actually, he has two names, Alan or Daniel, depending
if he's in Florida or not.
What mood he's in. He goes by whatever name. And then, but once he became a grandfather and, you know, I had my kids, I started calling him Grandpa instead of Alan. And the whole energy around he and I changed just by what I called him. Because when I call him Grandpa, he super softens up. But when I call him Alan, he feels defensive. So isn't that, that's interesting. I mean, we've talked about this before, but it's kind of cool. Call him Grandpa now.
I think there's some value to that.
Me too. I'll be like, hey, Grandpa. It's just easier.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are easier to love with certain names, like sweetie.
That's right. And I, my dad tends to break iPads. An iPad is his oxygen. Like he watches Netflix on it. He plays his Wheel of Fortune on it. So he broke it like 10 days ago. So I went to Walmart, bought him a new one. And we have this like thing going where I'll send him the new one. He sends me the old one that he broke and I'll fix it. And then we'll exchange it. Well, he just got the new one.
Brand new. Todd spent a whole day putting new stuff on it.
It's a little overstating, but I spent some time on it.
Well, I'm trying to give you props.
I know. I appreciate that.
Not to be.
No, I know. No, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And it turns out he dropped it in the garage 2 days after he got it. So now it doesn't work anymore. So good job, Dad. So I want to say hi to everybody. So I'm going to say hi to Karen and to Alicia and to Carney and to Jennifer and to Judy and to Kimmy and to Kristen and to Kelsey and to Lindsay. It's weird seeing Lindsay not at work.
I know. Hi.
You know?
Is Lindsay always at work? I feel like
she's always in the classroom and I always like want her to get mad at a kid or something like that.
As if Lindsay would do that. She doesn't get mad.
No, I don't know. It's more fun to see fights in classrooms, whatever. Jennifer and Pogbear and Jolene and Diane and Millie is connecting as we speak. And Joe, who is supporting the male to female
ratio,
because Sean told me he wasn't going to be here. And Anita and Emily and Helen. Oh, great. Helen's here.
Oh, good.
And Kimmy said the same is true for my husband and my mom. He calls her Gigi and it really helps.
That's what I called his mom was Gigi. We called her Gigi and I love that. And she came up with that and I love that for her.
And Alicia says, words have power, including names. And yep. Carney said, my hair was pretty. So thank you, Carney.
Is it, Carney? No. Are you being nice? Kathy, your hair is... Oh, I thought you were talking about his. I was like, that's kind of nice. Thank you. I blew dry my hair, Carney. I have been, in the middle of all this sheltering in place, when you hit walls, like we talked about, you kind of have to shift and do different things. And I think the first couple weeks of the pandemic, I was like, I felt free and I didn't take showers and I would like shower later in the day. And then the next couple weeks I would take showers, but throw my hair up in a ponytail wet. And that was freeing. And now I feel better blow drying my hair. I just feel like better. So, yeah. And that'll change again.
And I'm wearing my favorite hat. It's a woman.
It's my hat.
In a lotus position.
It's my yoga hat and Todd stole it. And now it's got a bunch of sweat stains inside of it. And I don't want to wear it because it's really dirty.
And I want to say hi to Jen Kovacs, who is married to one of my favorite people. His name is Steve Kovacs.
Hi, Jen.
And he's in the tribe. So, Jen, please get Steve on one of these calls soon, or I'm going to come over and kick his butt.
You can't. We're sheltering in place.
I'll kick his butt virtually.
Oh, that'll work.
I don't know how I'm going to do that. All right. So I've wasted enough of everybody's time. We're going to do a quick centering exercise. So if you're making lunches, why don't you get centered while making lunches? Or if you're doing whatever you're doing, or if you're walking around.
You start the centering. I'm going to get something that I want to read real quick.
So yeah. So if you guys are open to it and you're sitting down, or maybe you're laying down, I'm sitting. So I'm going to put my back up straight, but not too straight where it's uncomfortable. I'm going to put my feet flat on the floor, and I'm just going to rest and focus on my body weight resting on the chair, and just being thankful for having a chair. And I'm take one big conscious breath. And the whole idea of doing the centering exercise is to try to create a little space between the day that you've had up until this moment to the next 60 or so minutes. Sometimes it's nice just to kind of calm the nervous system down. So let's just do some very simple box breathing, where you breathe in for four. You hold for four. You breathe out for four. And you hold for four. Let's do that two more times. Breathe in. Hold. Breathe out. Hold. Last time. In. Hold. Out. Hold. And if your eyes were closed, I'll invite you to open them back up and join us.
Thank God for breathing.
Thank God for breathing. That's pretty much sums it up.
So one other thing I wanted to share is that I've found myself getting reacquainted with the parents Tao Te Ching. I'm a big fan of the Tao Te Ching. But I was just talking to somebody the other day, and they were asking me if I had read The Parents Tao Te Ching. And not only have I read it, but it's probably my favorite book, and it's my biggest gift that I give. But I lost track of it. I couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. So I got it again on my lovely Kindle, and I just wanted to read one to you guys. I just chose one randomly because every single one is good. But it would just be kind of, again, centering us in the things we're focusing on in Zen, in Team Zen, and also on Zen Parenting Radio. So this one is number 13, and it's called Fear of Failure. Beware of teaching your children to climb the ladder of success. Ladders lead down as well as up. If you overly protect your children, they will fear failure and avoid pain. But failure and pain are twin teachers of important lessons. Unless your children fully experience both, how will they know they have nothing to fear? So I chose that one randomly, but I think it's perfect for this time because I'm noticing that a lot of questions, and I'm sure this will be the case today, is a lot about fearing what our children are feeling or expressing or dealing with. And we're so afraid of it, yet what they're learning in the process of feeling all that discomfort is how to manage it and knowing that they can get through it and realizing, you know, for those of you who are on Facebook, I posted something the other day that kind of made me laugh, which was a meme that said, now I know why, you know, Laura Ingalls always wanted to go into town with Pa. When he was going to, you know, drive into town, and she would get so excited. And I think we're all kind of feeling that right now, where our children get joy out of really simple things like, oh, we're going for a drive, I'll go with you. Or, oh, we're going to walk downtown. Or, oh, we're going to have something different for dinner. Or, you know, they're finding joy in simple things. And that's not something you don't have to be like, yeah, but they should be having more. Like when things get difficult, you start to notice beauty in simple things. So Just a thought to put out there.
And how many are there? Are there 81 or 108?
Isn't it 80?
I thought it was. I'm going to look it up.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 81.
81.
So the reason I love the Parents Tao Te Ching, the Tao is a book that was written by Lao Tzu.
Lao Tzu.
Whatever, 1,000 years before Jesus or something like that. And
it means, the Tao means the way.
The way.
Mm-hmm.
And it is simple, really, really simple, easy to understand, like poems. Almost.
Mm-hmm. Verse.
And I love it because Kathy can read a book in a day. It takes me 2 weeks or whatever. And it's just a wonderful reminder. So yeah, I'm a big fan.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So here we go. We have a question from Helen that mm-hmm. I haven't read yet, but Kathy did read and responded, and maybe he even responded on Facebook. But I'm going to read it because we don't have any other questions. So if anybody is looking for some support, questions, comments, Let's use the space and let's use each other's energy and community to kind of support.
Yeah, just raise your hand and let us know.
Or just type in the chat box. Mm-hmm. So, dear Kathy and Todd, I have a question for the next Zen Talk. It's a topic that's been at the core of my thinking for a while now. I think I managed to isolate it and explain it below. I'd appreciate your thoughts on this topic. When does low...
Did we she gave us permission to ask this question, right?
I hope so. Otherwise, it's too late. The cat is out of the bag.
I'm trying to remember if she... Well, it's really not. Okay. How about, can I just summarize it just
sure.
in case? I think Helen's okay with it because I think it's applicable to everybody.
She's right here. Let's
okay.
ask her.
Helen, is this okay?
Oh, she just gave it a thumbs
okay.
up.
Okay, cool.
All right. Thank you.
Sorry, Taddy.
That's all right. Depression is a pathological, creating a biochemical soup in the body, which triggers the acute threat response designed for short-term use in a chronic way. So the system threat response system is triggered and stays engaged over a prolonged period. A period much longer than it was designed for, and because of this, it causes health issues. Depression triggers inappropriate use of the threat response system, which causes long-term physical issues in the body. In short, it's an unhealthy state to be in, and it is wise to try and avoid depression. Mindfulness teaching advise that we become the observer and observe everything that arises in consciousness with curiosity and compassion. When sadness, shame, anxiety arise, we can observe these emotions with curiosity and compassion and allow them to be. Emotions will pass through in a few minutes if they are allowed to. The human brain is very good at explanations and will wrap a story around an emotion, and then the emotion is tied down and cannot pass through. It can last a long time. Alternatively, the other extreme is that uncomfortable emotions are pushed away and ignored. This is my preferred style, which is equally unhealthy as it will persist and eventually come back possibly in quite an ugly way. So my question is, how do you know when to take the mindful route and let the emotion be? Curiosity is a type of focus and what your focus on grows, especially if you are prone to low mood, serotonin reuptake is too quick in my experience. And when do you reach for the SSRIs? Specific serotonin reuptake inhibitors. That's a lot of words and syllables.
That's what an SSRI is.
I'm sure you're going to help us understand with that. I asked my psychiatrist this question, and his answer lacked helpful insight, although I do know where I can get a supply of happy pills if I wish. So if I can understand that question is, when do I use mindfulness and when do I go to the pill?
Yeah. So, well, and I think what I said to Helen, and I actually wrote back to her, and so I can just read some of that so I can stay on task here, but it's not one or the other. Like, and I think that's sometimes where we get lost is we'll be like, well, is this good or is this bad? Is this right or is this wrong? And the first thing I would say in, you know, regarding depression and mindfulness, they're not two separate things, meaning you can experience depression and use mindfulness, and mindfulness doesn't necessarily take away your experience of depression, but it might be able to decrease the intensity or give you some insight to the depression. So it's not like, am I depressed taking an SSRI or am I being mindful? I'll just read this. I just said I wasn't going to go off on a target. So I said, depression is definitely an overactive threat response. As Helen explained, basically depression is, it can be that our body is on high alert, similar to anxiety. And so we're, secreting a lot of hormones that we may, chemicals that we may not necessarily need, but we are having these experiences, thought experiences or body experiences that are causing us to, our body to go into high alert. And that's what can cause some physical challenges. So again, mind body, a mind body response. So basically I said, depression is definitely an overactive threat response. And there's many different reasons for depression, grief, PTSD, anxiety, decreased serotonin. Like I have a girlfriend who was on SSRIs for a while, and then she decided she wanted to go off, and they started, and she was kind of struggling, and they started like testing her serotonin, and she was basically not making any. And she doesn't know if that's like,
what does serotonin do?
Serotonin is what keeps us, regulated and modulated. It can, make our mood better.
Got it.
And
it's a mood stabilizer.
Yeah, exactly. A natural mood stabilizer. And so she basically found that she had to go back on SSRIs because she wasn't making any at all. And some people will say that's because her body got used to SSRIs, or that could just be her own chemical makeup or her experiences. Doesn't matter. She just figured that out. But you know, depression can also be a spiritual awakening for some people. For me, I had many reasons for the depressions I experienced, but a spiritual awakening was part of it for me. And I think that can always be the case no matter what we're going through, because when you're going through depression, it can be a wake up call, hitting a wall, a willingness to look at things differently. It's not the only reason it's happening. It's just a piece of it. Okay. So you can have trauma and things that happen that cause it, but then there can be a spiritual awakening inside of it. So mindfulness is about observation, but they're not separate things. The hope behind mindfulness is to shine a flashlight into the mind and notice how it thinks, what it thinks, and what happens to the body when it thinks certain thoughts. So what mindfulness does is it allows you to look at your depression from an observer. So like, when I think certain things, here's what I feel. Here's what happens to me. Here's what decreases my mood. Mindfulness is not saying stop doing that. It's observing it. It's creating enough space to notice it. You know, for people who will say mindfulness will solve everything and, you know, you're either mindful or depressed, there's nothing true about that. You can be in the midst of a depression and be mindful and be observing it and still need other kind of support. So the mindfulness, though, can allow us to at least recognize what's happening and notice the thoughts that are harmful, unhelpful, okay? So mindfulness can be a tool to understand depression and even release some of the pressure of depression, but it's not the only tool. Medicine can be helpful, especially if the depression has gone on for a long period of time where you're no longer functioning in a way that you think is healthy. If you are feeling as if everything is difficult and everything is a slog and you have tried other things and you have been in therapy and you're like, this is not working, I need another way to keep managing, sometimes medicine can be the stabilizer that you need to do the other things. It's like, you know, because here's like maybe where we all, this is our foundation. And some of us are kind of like going up and down from here and kind of going below, but coming back up, and we're kind of going back and forth. Some people get so low that they're having a hard time even, it's like people who say that they feel like they're drowning. They're so below the foundation that they need some kind of support to get back up here on land. And then when they're on land, they can start journaling and doing meditation and things that then can help them that maybe they won't need the medication their entire life. You might.
It could be a bridge.
It could be
for
a bridge.
A short term, and some people need that bridge.
From here on,
yeah.
You know, just like some people take, and again, I like to compare it to other kind of medicines to normalize, you know, some people need heart medication or they need a blood pressure medication for a period of time. And some people need it their entire lives, and neither needs to be judged. Do you know what I mean? There's no like, this is right, this is wrong, you did well, you didn't. It's a very personal journey. Mm-hmm. So I really, you know, and I shared with Helen, as I've shared with all of you and everybody who listens to the show, you know, I come from a very holistic standpoint, obviously, as far as like, I want to do everything naturally and I want to, you know, make my own body do what it's supposed to do and live the mindfulness journey. But you know what? I have had experiences in my life where it wasn't enough. And I, you know, shared that a couple of years ago when I got really sick, I couldn't sleep. I was having panic attacks. I was not good. My mental wellness was not intact. And I thank goodness have a friend who's a psychiatrist who really was like, Kathy, you need to take this medication. And I think we figured out it was Xanax. It went by, no.
No, I think that was it.
Was it? Mm-hmm. I think there was a generic name. So I was like, it helped me sleep. I stayed on it for about 4 months, and then was able to kind of climb out of that hole that I got into when I had the flu, and I was able to reorient my sleep. And then after that, I didn't need it. But
doesn't mean that you won't need it again.
That's what I was going to say, is it doesn't mean I'm done. It means that now I understand.
In this now moment,
I don't need it. Will I need it again? Possibly. And I have a better outlook on it than I used to. I used to like fear needing things like that. Mm-hmm. And now I don't. I'm like, thank God.
Well, and that was a wake up call for you, because there's probably some kind of, like you said, preconditioning where you're like, you know, the pills are, you know, the last line of defense, and it's, you got to do everything else other than that. And then that the flu and the depression hit you in such a way where like, you had to surrender, like, hey, man.
And we all go through these things, like, it, depending on, I kind of think it's that place again of, I like to consider myself a Western practitioner and also an Eastern practitioner, and that both work and that both are helpful to me personally and the clients I'm working with. Is why leave any tool off the table? Why are we trying to say you can only do this? Like, as a mother, attachment parenting is great, but you know what else is great? Self-care and getting out of the house. Mm-hmm. So you can, if you're too extreme one way, then you're going to end up self-harming, and not only self-harming, but then you'll start judging other people. And we're going through that right now with the pandemic of how people are experiencing it and what they're doing. I'm finding myself judging too.
Yeah.
And so I think that the whole idea of, look, everybody disappeared, all their pictures.
So real quick.
Cam, just so you know, we're on a call, babe.
Yeah, no more accidents. Just kidding. So I think we're having some technical issues. So here's the deal. I'm on Wi-Fi right now, and I might switch over to hotspotting my cell phone. So if you guys can't hear us, just know that
Can you hear us right now? Okay.
So okay. If we lose you, just hang tough.
Yeah.
So
go ahead.
My two cents is two things. One is, I'll ask the question this way. Anybody who has never suffered from any mild form of depression, raise their hand.
Yeah. Oh, Alicia, never.
Good for her. Yeah. I mean, no, honestly, like, no,
that's good
for her.
Yeah.
But most of us, like, I just want to, one, normalize Helen's question.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we all deal with, not we all, most of us deal with that. And the other thing is, as somebody who continued to work on feeling the highs and the lows of my moods, it kind of reminds me, like, sometimes when I'm on my men's retreats and guys are crying and they'll apologize for crying. As somebody who is not able to access sadness through tears very often, I'm always like, hey man, don't apologize for it. Like, you feel like that's not, I know it's a scary place to be in a depression, but it's also kind of, I don't want to say beautiful, but you are doing something, whether it's sadness or depression, that's something that I have a harder time accessing it. And I almost get like mad when somebody apologizes for their tears. I'm like, dude, I would give anything to be able to do that. So maybe it's just a small reframe on how that is.
Well, and there's a difference between having highs and lows and having an ongoing chronic depression. You know, there, I think that sometimes women can relate to this, especially with postpartum issues, is where, you know, you may not have gone through big depressions in your life, but if you had postpartum, you know when something doesn't feel right. Like, you're like, something's not right. And if you've had that experience, you can start to kind of differentiate between what your foundation is. And are you going to change something?
I am going to try to change over
okay,
the hotspot.
Hold on 1 second.
So bear with us. Let's just see if it connects, because sometimes my cell phone doesn't want to connect with it. Okay. All right. So I think we lost them for a second, but now we're hotspotting.
Can you hear us again?
It's better.
Okay. So I wanted to comment, Gail was just posting about The Body Keeps Score, which is an excellent book. And it is, you know, we've talked about the book on the show, if, you know, on the Zen Parenting show. It is all the thing that I learned early on and why I became much more of a holistic kind of,
Helen has her hand raised too.
Okay, good. Let me finish this thought.
Sure.
We'll go to Helen. Yeah. And Joe is holding The Body Keeps Score right there. The reason why that's important is because you do the whole, okay. Everything I've said, you have to like hold it all as valuable. And I think sometimes because I had experiences prior to this flu experience where I had depression and I was able to understand my history and I was able to use other methods of getting through it. And because I was able to understand and release my trauma and use body work, I was very much like, this is the way. This is the way for everybody. And I was very focused on it. And for good reason, I still am. But then sometimes other experiences aren't exactly the same, meaning we have so much difficulty that we need another kind of help. And I feel blessed that I've had all of the above, meaning I've had experiences where I've been able to use meditation and things like biofeedback or things like body work and Reiki in a way that has healed me. And I have also been sick enough that I need medicine to heal me, and that both are okay. So what I always want to say to people who are, and you know, and Gail is saying this, when you find something that works for you, absolutely use it, love it, offer it to people, share it, but then keep in mind that not everybody, that's not going to be everybody's path. That's yours. And if they ask for advice or if they want it, you get to offer it. But if they say, you know, I tried this or I'm going this way, like I have two of my best friends right now are going through this with their children, deciding whether or not they're going to medicate them. And I always, obviously that's not, I just know that their experience is not necessarily mine and that I need to listen, offer when they ask, but also support where they're going on their journey. So it's like, it's not I'm right, they're wrong, or they're good, I'm bad. You know, it's all of the above. So
I'm going to read Jen's comment and then we're going to listen from Helen. So Jen says, I know when I need to be on meds when I am in it, but can't see through it.
Yeah.
It also depends on the sense of urgency around being able to access my coping skills.
Good.
During one bout, I did neurofeedback, but I wasn't seeing results and felt like I was slipping into crisis mode, so opted for meds. I have been on Lexapro now for 18 months, and it's honestly the only reason I am functioning.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Helen, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to add, sorry, I think my microphone's right here. The only thing I wanted to add was that I'd had a conversation with my doctor, and what we were talking about was... it's a bit like paracetamol. It's like it gives you a temporary relief. And then it gives you, like you were saying, Kathy, then you can investigate what's the underlying cause.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I was worried about is I see so many people who just take them, like people in my family, for years. I mean, like, and I don't even think they've had much talk therapy or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just, they just take it because the doctor gives it to them.
Yep.
And that's what I was worried about. But I think I had this idea, like I just didn't want to take medicine. But I do take, like I'm quite fond of, well, not fond, but like if I get a headache, I'll take paracetamol. I won't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of like, that's really helped. That's kind of like moved me past this barrier of like, you know, it's like less of a big deal now. It's mm-hmm. just a kind of like you were saying, it's just different tools.
It's different tools.
And sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Helen. I'm sorry. I talked over you.
No, I just wanted to say it's really interesting what you were saying about like the judgment aspects of like people who've been on meds for years. And like, because I'm so like, I just naturally have this interest and this kind of like, I just love learning about this topic and it's so interesting to me and blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm like, why don't you like, you know, just why on earth wouldn't you be interested in like, just going a bit further and trying to understand that, but no, not so far.
Yeah.
So that's like, I have to like deal with that with my, it is like, it's a judgment. It's like, I'm annoyed, but I'm annoyed because it's my stuff, you know?
Yes.
And I've got to get through that before I could even like get to a place where I could possibly help somebody else. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I do.
That's kind of like, that's really.
And I'll jump in.
Yeah.
And I find myself judging, like if, you know, Helen's like, oh, I take this. I'm like, great, do that. My thing is, that's fine, but I'm not going to do it because I judge myself much more critically than I do other people. And I think that's just kind of like our programming or whatever. So, and there was one other thought I was going to say about depression, and I don't remember what it was.
Well, and I also think that sometimes we got to, this is such an, I always love talking about this because I have such an emotional response to all of it because I've been you, Helen. I feel like I've probably been everybody on here as far as I used to really beat the drum for no meds because I used to be a therapist who had to give people meds all the time. I used to work in a children's hospital and the psychiatrist would come to me and say, convince this family to put their kid on meds. And it tore me apart because I knew the kid could do 10 other things first before going on that med. And I felt like I was not in my integrity telling this parent to give their kid a med when we hadn't even talked to them about nutrition, what they're watching, the family support. And that's what threw me way one side.
Yeah.
Where when I stopped doing that work, I was like, I'm done with meds. Meds are bad. You know, and that's what threw me into really holistic thinking. And thank God, because that saved me in many ways, helped with my own awakening, helped with my own self-awareness. But then I think like everything, we have to find that place in between where meds are bad if somebody is in a lot of pain and they go to a doctor and they talk to the doctor for 3 minutes and then they get a prescription and they never investigate it, mm-hmm. because then no investigation. Because here's the other thing about medication, including SSRIs, it's not always effective.
Yeah.
So it's one tool.
It's a tool that it sometimes has side effects. Sometimes it doesn't have side effects and it does exactly what it's supposed to do. It reminds me of that book that I've never read, but you read, called Broken Open.
Yeah.
And I don't know who wrote that, Elizabeth Lesser.
Yeah.
And it's just a book where something bad happened to her. Mm-hmm. Mom died or something like that.
She got a divorce.
And she probably sank into some version of a depression. Mm-hmm. But from that depression, something came out of it. So it's not like there's not one lane to go through. Mm-hmm. This is all an individual self-exploration that we need to kind of like look into. Like kind of Kathy's point, she used the word investigation. Like if I'm just going to take a pill and not try to investigate anything, mm-hmm. I wouldn't subscribe to that. But it depends on the depth of my depression.
Like, right. That may be the first thing I do just so I can sleep again.
Yeah.
Right. Like when I had no sleep, I didn't really care about meditation. I was like, I need to sleep. And then these are the foundational elements. And then we figure it out and we swing back and forth. And I've had a little more practice with this than Todd, just because of migraines, because you guys, I went through about 15 years of having migraines, refusing medicine because I felt like it was something I could solve. And I kept investigating and blaming myself and diving into trauma and then being in bed once a month for 3 days. And then finally I decided to take medicine, and guess who had a headache this morning and then took medicine and is now here. Do you see what I mean? Like I'm tired of like flattening myself. And I did that for too long. Mm-hmm. I think that medicine has been, and I also still, as you know, I'm saying this over and over again, just so you hear the balance. I'm also still meditating and journaling and eating right and trying to, I take vitamins to help with my migraines. I'm not done investigating them. I'm not done. I'm just not going to suffer anymore. Right. There's this middle place that if we can find, and it's a journey.
So I want to just mention Joe's comment.
Yes.
And then we're going to head over to Helen. Do you feel complete? Do you feel good?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay.
That was really good.
Thank you, Helen.
All right. So Joe said, my girlfriend is mostly isolated with her parents on their family farm and struggling with entrenched negative dynamics that have been continuing since her childhood, and her family members have shown no desire to change. My struggle is trying not to give too much advice or therapize them and to just listen and hold it.
I mean, I'm happy to go, but since, did you want to go first?
No, you go ahead.
So I think you kind of, Joe, are answering your own question. What's so interesting about this time and being, depending on who we're socially isolating with, is we have to be aware that the people that we're with are going to be who they are. And just because that we're in a different situation doesn't mean everybody's going to change and have this like awakening, especially when it's parents, because it's pretty ingrained and old, and you know, maybe they, I mean, everyone can learn new things, but what I'm saying is sometimes that's going to be a difficult to do. So I think what I love about your question is the last line, which is just to listen and hold it. Now, you don't need to hold it. I'm doing to you, Joe, what I do to Todd. I'm focusing on words. You don't need to hold it literally, but you need to create space for it. So you don't have to take it on. It's not yours. And if you try to take it on, you won't be able to do anything about it anyway, because it's not yours. Mm-hmm. But you can just, it's instead of like hold it, open up your arms metaphorically and be like, I have space for it. Mm-hmm. So she may be sharing with you more stories where maybe 2 months ago you would have been like, okay, you know, let's move on to the next thing. Whereas now you're like, no, I have a little more space for this because my girlfriend's suffering.
And this sounds easier than it is.
Oh my God, yes.
Can you listen without judgment? For me, that's like one definition of holding space. Can you listen without judging the person? And for me, having a brain who's designed over whatever, millions of years to judge, it's hard not to judge. But can you be aware, like, okay, I'm going to go in with the intention of not judging and just listening.
And not therapizing, like you said.
Yeah, for sure.
Unless, Joe, unless she says to you, and you can even, when she's done and you've held the space, you can say, do you want any thoughts from me, or did you just want to share? And she may say, no, give me, because sometimes I do want some thoughts from Todd. And just opening that door, she may say, I do want some thoughts. And she may need some positive, uplifting perspective. And you can give her a little bit of the light, you know, or the sun or the, you know, silver lining. She may need that just to kind of, sometimes the visual I get is sometimes when people dump out a lot, they've created space in them. And sometimes I visualize myself giving them something positive to fill in that space. So it's like they've dumped out something negative and I want to give them something to fill in that space if they want it. Sometimes they just want
to
release.
So Joe, we're going to go to Judy, but first I want to see if you want to add anything. So I'm going to unmute you. Any thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, I guess the kind of the struggle for me is even when she says that she appreciates advice or when I'm giving her feedback, sometimes I still even feel guilty. Like I should just be listening and not talking so much, I guess.
So she's asking you for advice, you're giving it, and you feel guilty even though you're giving her something she asked for.
Well, no, I mean, it's like she'll tell me a story and then I'll give her feedback and be like, oh, is it okay? Like, I don't want to like over, you know, I don't want to give you advice if you don't want it. And she'll be like, no, I appreciate it. It's great. Mm. But then I just kind of feel guilty myself of like a pattern of me like continually giving advice when it wasn't asked for, even if it, does that make sense?
Like, yeah.
I would say, Joe, at the risk of being overgeneralizing, I love fixing problems. And when somebody comes to me with a problem, it's really hard for me to bite my tongue. So first I sit with you in solidarity in that. And it's an opportunity for you to stretch yourself. Like, you don't have to all of a sudden become this Zen guy and create this space without giving any feedback or any advice. But can you just lean away just a little bit? Next time she comes up with something and, you know, the minute that you like want to speak, maybe you just like take one breath and say, is this really, is she best served right now by me giving advice? Or do I just want to let the silence happen for another breath or two and see how she responds?
Yeah. And I think for me, it's important to remind myself that I can always ask, and I kind of get lost in that sometimes where it's like, just ask, you know?
And then Joe, if you feel like you overtalk, I'm a total overtalker, as all of you know, I just talk. And it sometimes when I overtalk after I'm done and I'm like, I'll say, I just really gave you a lot. And I'm just realized, because sometimes you don't even realize how much you said till you're done. And you're like, you know, I just gave you a lot. And I just want you to know that I'm sharing a lot, but really this time was for you. And, you know, I'm sorry if I didn't hold the space as well as I could have in that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay. And she may say, no, that I wanted that. And then if that's true, then you can just let that be. You offered your thoughts, you pulled back. So just know that I struggle with that too. I give a lot of advice.
Yeah, it's been feeling more like that. And then I feel a little guilty at the end.
So. Yeah, understood.
Well, and I would say, Joe, that's your work. Like, look at that. You feel guilty. So look inward, like what's happening inside of you when you feel guilty, because it sounds like she's asking for some support, you're giving it to her, yet you feel guilty. And I would just, you know, do some self-inquiry, like, what is that all about? Like, is this a pattern that reminds you of something from before, or do you need to lean in or lean away? So, you know, what is this relationship? You know, we're in relationships to learn about ourselves. I'm in a relationship with Kathy to learn about myself.
Yeah.
I have three daughters to learn about myself, not to teach them. What do I have to learn from them? So just use it as a learning experience. Like, wow, this is interesting. Like, I find myself giving a lot more advice than I feel comfortable with. So,
and then I feel bad. Yeah. It is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, the struggle is like, what is my deeper things that are making me feel guilty about it, that I shouldn't be guilty about it because this person appreciates what I'm doing. So,
yes. Right. Yeah. So you got something cooking in there. So I'd love to work with you on it, but anyways, maybe another, maybe another time. I do have a free coaching session for anybody who wants it. So it's there for you, Joe. So,
cool.
All right, we're going to go over to Judy, which is a really interesting question because something I struggle with all the time. So I'm going to answer first.
Okay, Todd, this is Todd's an expert in there, Judy.
I'm not an expert. That's why.
What I mean is he could have written this. I only saw the first sentence.
My question is about being addicted to productivity. This is Todd raising his hand. I like the idea of being less productive, and I agree that we are usually way overscheduled. Many of my friends are enjoying the current state, taking away the pressure of being overscheduled and spending more time at home. For me, even if I don't want to be over busy, with the current state of things, I feel empty.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that my ambition is taken away without me, without the productivity.
Mm-hmm.
The emptiness feels uncomfortable, but I don't want to jump into productivity just to ease the feeling. How do I find the balance?
What a beautiful question.
This is a good question. So when I can't speak for you, Judy, but for me, I have an addiction to productivity. And if I, in my moments of looking inward, what is this about? For me, it's about my value is based upon something outside of myself. How many emails I get through, how many times I play catch with my girls in front, how many times, like, it's all these things. So basically what I'm doing is I'm outsourcing my approval. So like you call, I'm caught in ego. Like my ego says, Todd, the only way for you to feel good at the end of the day is if you check a bunch of stuff off the list. So the way I interpret that is I'm outsourcing my need for approval, control, and security from somebody outside of myself. So as much I want to tell myself and you, Judy, like, oh, well, just don't do that anymore. It first starts with acceptance. Can I accept myself for being addicted to this productivity? Can I accept myself for knowing that all the approval, control, security in the entire world resides within me and it's not outside of me? And I have a choice. I could either go into a shame spiral like, oh, I wish I wasn't like that. Or can I like embrace the one who wants to be productive? And then if I can first start with that acceptance and maybe even embracing of that one who wants to be productive, then and only then will I really be able to kind of reframe what productivity is. Like, is it productive for me to sit on the front porch and look at the birds? Today, it's actually a little more productive now than it was a few months ago. Like, I'm enjoying not doing anything now. And maybe that's because of COVID. I don't know where it comes from.
I think
from.
You're enjoying less pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, there is less pressure mm-hmm. for sure. So the environment is such that has allowed me to lean into other things other than checking emails or getting on an airplane or going on a sales call. So those are my two cents. But like I said, Judy, I'm right there with you on this. I'm struggling. And that's what I got so far. What do you think?
And you know, Judy, so am I. Like, I'm kind of joking when I say that, you know, it's only Todd. I think I'm a little better about sitting, but only because, and this is, and I guess this is what I could share or offer, is I love that you use the word empty, because there are days that I get a lot of things checked off my list, but I still feel empty. And what I have had to do, part of my journey is like, what does, this starts to sound so generic, so bear with me. What does fill me up and make me feel like I did something worthy? And it's not the amount of things I did. It's the fact that I did meditate, the fact that I called my mother, the fact that I returned emails to people who needed me, the fact that I checked in with my good girlfriend this morning whose mom just had bypass surgery yesterday. There are certain things that are so full of love that even if they're not me moving all the time, they leave the day feeling meaningful and productive, but not productive in the way society tells us is productive. I also have to do certain kind of work that society tells me is productive. You know, I have to teach and turn in my grades and read all the papers. And, you know, I have to do that too. It's not about one or the other. It's about for you, Judy, when you wake up in the morning, the, you know, the feeling of overproductivity is, oh, I know, I've got a book for you. All right. I was trying to sit here and think about it. Danielle Laporte wrote a really good book that helped me a lot. And it's the focus is, will you look it up? Look up Danielle Laporte, because I want to make sure I give her the right one, because she's
Judy,
got a bunch.
You got Millie, she's right there. She's
Will you look up Danielle?
Oh, she's on her phone. She doesn't have her laptop
on a call
in front of her.
We're like, Millie, we depend on you to do all of our things. It's a book that focuses on what we're searching for every day is not things to do, but feelings we want to have. And what productivity for you has created a feeling of like, I feel full or I feel enough. It's called The Desire Map. Okay. It's this book right here. And it really helped me figure out called The Desire Map. And you can go to Danielle Laporte's page. You can listen to it on audio. You don't even have to read the whole book. What it's about is she helps you narrow down what are the feelings I'm looking for during the day. And I did the whole book and the whole worksheet and figured out what are the feelings that I want. And the feelings that I wanted were connection. I have them written in my office. Let's see, connection, inspiration. And then there was one other, I think it was maybe compassion or love. So basically what I did then is built my day around finding those feelings rather than doing a bunch of things. Does that, and so it, this kind of sounds general until you do it yourself, Judy, because there's a whole thing that she helps you go through where, because busyness and overproductivity, it's like we're on the race to nowhere. We think we're getting somewhere.
But I love being productive.
You can be. And I'm not, I, like I said, I love it too. And maybe the feeling you like is doing a lot, and that is okay. Like that, but maybe doing a lot can start to include planting flowers and, you know, going through a cabinet and cleaning it out, and that you start to be productive in ways instead of as a mom or as a worker, you start to be productive in ways that are more creative.
What I would say even that, and then I'm going to read a few comments, one from Alicia and one from Gail, and then maybe Judy wants to chime in. I don't know. Judy, tell me if you want to chime in. It's not about what you're doing. It's from what energy are you doing it. So I almost like, if I'm going to check emails, if in a perfect world, I'm going to surrender and know that doing these emails is not going to make me feel any more secure than as if I didn't do it.
So you're not a better person.
I'm not a better person because I do this. So if I can surrender to the fact that everything I have is within me right now, and I has no idea how many emails I get through today. From that place, if I can surrender to that and then do the emails, I think I'll be a healthier person. But most of the time, I'm in the race to nowhere, and I'm just trying to crank these out and feel, and kind of you're like, I want to connect. I want to feel valued. I want to be loved. Like that's, you know, I'm sending an email out. I just want to be loved. And, you know, you don't think about that when you're, you know, cranking out emails, but really that's the underlying motivation.
See me.
Yes. So Alicia says productivity. I recently realized that my happiness or self-worth is somehow tied to my productivity. And I've learned that what helps me is stopping to value the progress I've made in a project and stopping to appreciate that a project is done. I have a tendency to just hop to the next
thing. Totally. Me too.
I've talked about this book called Atomic Habits, and I'm doing these things, and I have this habit tracker where I put an X in a box at the end of the day to see if I've done it. So to your point, like I do feel pretty awesome at the end of the day when I check these things off my list. So I don't know if that's where you're going with Alicia. And then Gail says, I'm like Judy and Todd, and I've been staying awake until 2 a.m. trying to get things done. And I worry I'll regret not taking advantage of this time to let things go.
So many of my clients are saying that.
And Jim wants to know the name of the book again.
It's called The Desire Map. Maybe you could type it in. The Desire Map. Yeah.
Sure.
You know, Danielle Laporte has a lot of books, but I think that's her core teaching. So in all of her books, she'll refer to it, but The Desire Map is really the, and you probably won't be able to find it on Kindle because there's a lot of worksheets inside of it, or on audio. It's probably just paperback. Bye, honey.
Judy, do you want to chime in at all or no? Oh, yes, she does. Go ahead and unmute yourself, Judy.
Yeah, so like everything was very helpful. And I think like what you said to focus on the feelings, and I have to do more work on that. It feels like with the productivity, everything is external, like external rewards. And I don't want to go there, but it's just hard to find. And what else? I think we've been conditioned so much to find happiness in that. So I find like, I agree with the idea, but then I find like I'm questioning myself, everything I do. Like if I help others, like I like helping, but do I do it because I was told that it's a good thing to do? Like, is it external again or is it internal? So I'm questioning everything, and it's hard to find my way.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's, and it's funny.
It's both and.
Well, in one way I know whether or not I'm doing something for the right reasons or the wrong reasons. I've been playing with this lately. If I'm serious about something, I know I'm most likely below the line, which means I'm in a threatened state. If I'm playful about something, I know that I'm approaching it with a more curiousness, some curiosity. So what I've been trying to do lately, Judy, is when I'm doing things, I check in with myself, like, what is my facial expression right now? I'm like, is it kind of like a resting, frowning face, or is it something a little bit lighter? And I just want to like check in, like, from what energy am I doing this email from? And if it's from a place of levity, then I know it's for the right reason. So like, I don't know, it's just, it's another self-awareness mechanism. And, you know, whether or not if it's an email or a conversation with Kathy or my daughters, me being overproductive, I judge that I'm way too serious. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Judy, if you feel the same way, but can I approach my wife with a little bit more levity and playfulness? And that's been a really helpful reminder.
And also just, it's similar to the medicine conversation, or, you know, depression and mindfulness and medicine. It's similar in that ambition and external validation is not bad. Like, it's okay to want external validation. I want it occasionally. We all do. And it's not. And so if you're like, but this feels good because there's external validation coming in. Yeah. Like, all humans want that. It's how do we not, you know, it's again, finding that gray place in between. Yeah. If we're like, if everything is about what everybody else thinks, then we're going to lose ourselves. But if we're completely in this place where it's all about us, then we're not connected. Mm-hmm. So it's like, where's that place in between? So I guess what I would, you know, don't, or I can't say don't, but be thoughtful about not being too hard on yourself about appreciating external validation, because it's fine. But it's like, what if the ideal combination is I'm doing something because it feels good, it's what I want to do, and then I happen to get external validation. That's icing, right? You know, it's like, that's the beautiful place. And so it's not one's good, one's bad. You know, like, even with our kids, I like Judy's language about, we have so been conditioned and we are overly conditioning our kids to focus on external validation. That is what grades are. That is what SAT scores are. That is what decision day sweatshirts are. We're like everybody else giving you feedback that you're good. And so we've all been conditioned this way. And then we have to, the enlightenment or awakening or awareness or mindfulness is like, but then what do I want in the midst of that?
And and one way I would unpack it, like, I look inward, like, okay, why do I want to be so overproductive? And then Kathy and I did this thing called a persona interview, and I took on the energy of the overproductive one. And one of it's like an 8-question prompt. And one of the questions was, who did you learn this from? And I instantly, like, my mom, like, wow, I didn't. And it's like, it was like a light bulb moment. Like, wow, I am following this pattern that my mom was always having to do something productive. Like, she wouldn't even eat. She'd cook. She'd eat for like 4 seconds, start cleaning up. Like, and what it helped me to do is, like, I'm not my mom. I can appreciate my mom for what she taught me. Yet my judgment is she was a little too out of balance with her productivity. Like, how do I investigate that a little bit more? So,
and it was also based in your fear of not wanting to do what your dad did,
right? But so, that was a little bit different. But yeah, because my dad was a lazy bum,
so you were like, I gotta follow this path,
right? So I had a dad over here who, I love my dad, he's alive and well, 80 years old in Tampa, Florida, but he would park his police squad car in the garage and watch TV while on duty. Like, lazy, you know, that's
took an easier
unethical
way,
whatever. My mom, who wasn't a perfect person, got up at 4 in the morning, and she worked 2 or 3 jobs to get us through college. So she was over here. So, like, I don't want to be my dad, but my mom, like, didn't stop and take a look around in the first 60 years of her life. I don't want to be that either. So this is a little bit like therapy stuff, but it's something that helped me. Mm-hmm. So anyways, yeah, just look inward. Okay, so we only have a few minutes left. I know Carney had something, but I can't see Carney.
Did she type it, or?
She just said something about that. She posted something on Facebook.
Okay, let me look, Carney. I may have.
Hold on, she's here. Maybe she could just.
Okay.
Are you there? Carney? I can't hear you.
I'm going to look on Facebook.
Yeah, I didn't get your message, unfortunately.
I think I'm remembering it. Okay, here it is. I got it. So, Carney, hopefully you can hear. I'm going to read your question. It says, I'm having trouble with my 6th grade son who's always needed structure, so homeschooling is getting more difficult. I'm trying to provide structure with his input, but he's fighting back with constant procrastination and arguing. He wants all the freedoms that his older sister has. He questions why she gets a later bedtime. all I can come up with is that she's older. He's also self-motivated, and that she is also self-motivated and very organized, but I don't want to point that out and make him feel bad. So I think I did comment that we could talk about it on the Zen Talk. So I'm sorry, I forgot that, Carney. So
it sounds like she's having a hard time dealing with maybe a perceived unfairness between her sixth grade son.
Or her sixth grade son feels there's an unfairness and that he's having a hard time with the structure.
Got it. Okay. So what do you think?
Well, you know, I mean, this gets like, I don't know how much time we have left. I'll use what I can here. It's bigger because I guess it's, what is the bottom line expectation that you have for him? Like what, when you're saying he's not organizing himself, he's not structuring himself, you mean the way he did during the regular school year? Do you mean that he's experiencing anxiety and you're finding that he can't emotionally regulate? And the reason I ask is because like all these, it's less about saying, here's what you say to your son to get him more organized or here's what you do, and more about standing back and noticing what he's experiencing right now. One thing that I heard Lisa DeMora say the other day, I was in one of her workshops, is, you know, this time of year is typically when kids start to check out if they're in school. You guys know that, right? Like in April and May, pretty much after spring break, kids start to check out, which is why we do all the award ceremonies and all the field days and all the fun stuff at the end of the year, because the kids are kind of like done. So you're probably going to notice that in e-learning too. And that doesn't mean you completely let him check out, but maybe you loosen a little bit and say, just get as much done. Like my girls sometimes wake up, check in, meaning they, you know, say they're in attendance, go back to sleep and then start their homework at noon. I don't really care. I mean, and again, I know for some of you, you're like, I have younger kids, that won't work. And I get it. Like, I'm not saying do what I do, but there is can they figure out how to get it in their way and not in our way? If they can't, and you've had a parent-teacher conference or you're hearing from the teacher, basically it's just sitting down and saying, you know, I'm totally open to any way that you want to do this, but the end result has to be the same, meaning you have to turn it in, you have to finish it. Yeah. And so what agreement can we come to for these last 2 weeks and kind of have a lightness to it rather than a fear of my child is going to lose himself?
Let's pull her in.
Oh, good.
You there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, yep. We can hear you.
Okay. Sorry about that. I don't know what's going on with my Mac. Yeah, I feel like it is getting better. And that day that we had trouble, you know, he was tired. It was late at night. I was tired. At night is when I tend to miss my dad more. He passed away in September from a very aggressive cancer. And I was really, you know, his words, his tone were, he's not an aggressive kid, but his tone was just like, just boom, 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 boom with the attacks. Like, you're making me get off the Xbox. I want to communicate with my friends. This is my only chance and time during the day to talk to my friends. Meanwhile, he has plenty of freedom on the Xbox during the day, like probably more than he should have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't feel like I really was taking his friends away from him by making him come off at a certain time because it was time to get ready for bed. So he brings up the, excuse of his sister gets to stay up later. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I just felt like because it was just a time of the night where I was really becoming vulnerable about missing my dad. I just had to walk away. And I know that we are supposed to, head into these kinds of conversations, head on with, even though they're uncomfortable, but at this one, I just felt I had to leave. I had to leave the room. I had to go downstairs. I could feel myself getting more and more upset with his tone. But then I kind of felt guilty for not dealing with this issue head on.
Yeah.
She's navigating right now.
Well,
hold on.
Okay.
So my two cents, Carney, is I would love for you to share with your son what you just shared with us. I miss my dad. I'm not in my best place right now. I think what you did was what you had to do. You were not in a place to negotiate, so you had to leave. And I feel like you're criticizing yourself for that. And I'm like blessing you for it. Like it would have gone sideways if you would have continued to you know, you're missing your dad, you're frustrated, it's the end of the day, and then all of a sudden you're going to get into
a deep conversation,
argument with your son. And then also say, dude, I totally get it. It is unfair. She is older than you. You probably can handle more. I understand why you think this is unfair. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you have every right to think this is unfair. That doesn't mean you're going to cave and be like, okay, you win. But you can at least meet him like, I get it. This is very frustrating.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say is I don't have any conversations at night. I actually, Cameron just came down the stairs. So Cameron and Skylar were like arguing about something last night and I could hear them and it was like midnight. And I go, girls, stop having this conversation at midnight. Like, what did I say? She was being
so unrealistic. I don't know, she was being unrealistic.
Well, both of, you know, it was a back and forth. Yeah.
So she was the only one being unrealistic. You weren't being unrealistic at all.
No, she was being unreasonable. I literally took a freaking makeup wipe. She's like, you have to ask me every single time.
Right.
Ooh. But she still had so many left. Like, she's right. Full pack. Like, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
So I just assume the next time we go to the store, you guys will get some for
right.
me.
Right.
Right.
And
I don't know if you guys can hear.
Yeah. So there's some unreasonableness.
But so the point is, it's not about solving the makeup wipe solution or thing. It's about that at midnight, we don't have all of our tools.
We have our whole family here right now.
Everybody's here.
Hey, family meeting.
I know. Yeah, so, okay.
Why don't you guys come by and say hi to the team?
My family's here, so I'm going to finish up.
Family meeting.
Family meeting. Come over back so everybody can see you because they can't see you over there.
Or else you're grounded.
So here's Cameron. She wanted the wipe. Here's Skylar. She didn't want to give up the wipe.
Come over here. I know. You
know. So, Carney.
That's Cameron up there. And that's Skylar. And that's JC. JC's mad because we're making her do this.
My point is, let me finish this point.
Sorry, go ahead, sweetie.
Don't be hard on yourself. Nighttime is a hard time to have a conversation, and you can, all of you, not just Carney, but you guys can table things for another day. If there are times at night that I don't have what it takes to have that difficult conversation, you don't have to have it in that moment. If you have the energy, do it. But if not, say this is too important of a conversation to have right now. Let's table this till tomorrow.
And then maybe you let him get another hour on the Xbox.
Yeah, I mean, or whatever it means for you in that moment. But gotta go.
Over time.
Yeah,
I just want to read. You're welcome, Carney. My son, Jen says, my son had a visit with his play therapist and she spoke to me afterwards and she said kids have consciously or subconsciously hit a wall.
Truth.
At this moment in time during the pandemic and they're acting out in different ways.
Yep. Everybody.
Like they are sensing that the change is going to last much longer than they had in their minds. She says presenting as low energy, lethargic, and tuning out at home.
It sucks. I mean, all the things that these girls, that they have had to let, and I'm saying these girls, meaning all your children too, that they have had to let go of at the end of the year that they no longer get. And now they're hearing that their camps are getting canceled and that their trips are getting canceled. It's constant negativity and disappointment coming at our kids. And then to wake up in the morning and say, yeah, but do your homework. It all feels so unimportant. And so we have to like meet them in that rather than push against it. You know what I mean?
Have you hit a wall?
I'm okay because I have self-motivation when it comes to school. But, you know, I understand how other kids who have more trouble than, like, others with focusing at school, this is impossible.
This is impossible.
Because you don't have to face your teachers. You're not getting the motivation. And there's no reason. You have nothing to look forward to.
Birdie, right. You hit a wall?
A little bit, yeah.
What's the worst part about COVID as far as your experience?
I'm trying to
getting spring break canceled is pretty bad.
Spring break.
I don't even like talking about it. And not seeing my friends because the weather is so nice. No one.
Birdie, anything to add?
Probably summer being ruined.
Summer being ruined.
JC is going into her senior year in high school, and this is like that summer, you know, where she's 17, you know, her life is changing, and they can't do. And I mean, you guys are doing a pretty good job doing things, but it's so lame in comparison to what they would be doing.
Skylar, have you hit a wall, and what's the worst part about COVID for you? She doesn't know.
But she has learned to play piano, which is interesting and fun. And the last thing is like, as we let you go here, is another thing Lisa DeMora said that I really appreciated because a lot of parents are like, what am I going to do this summer with my kids? Like everything's being canceled. What am I going to do? And this is actually, I said this, she didn't, but I'm like, well, what have we been doing already? We're going to do the same thing. We're going to keep going. But her comment was, it's not such a bad thing that these kids who have been overstructured their whole lives and overprogrammed are going to have a summer where maybe they can learn how to juggle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean juggle like multitask. I mean, literally learn how to juggle. And that's a metaphor for everything else. Maybe they learn about bugs. Maybe they learn about boredom. Maybe
maybe they learn how to tickle.
Maybe they learn how to tickle the ivories.
Tickle the ivories. That's me because I play piano now.
I know that is the easy thing to say. It's the silver lining in the cloud. We still have to confront the cloud. Mm. I'm not trying to step over it. But it's like a piece that we don't want to forget. That it's not. Oh, it's okay that our kids are going to have a summer where they are not overprogrammed.
So I have to close this meeting because I have to go to Walmart to pick up a baseball bat because Skylar and I are learning batting practice. Right. So anyways,
confront the cloud. All right. Casey's making fun of me because I said confront the cloud.
Confront the cloud.
She's like, confront.
All right. So guys, if you're with us, just give us jazz hands. We'll see you guys next
week.
Love
you.
Thank you. Listen to Pop Culturing.
Yeah, Pop Culturing's good this week. 5 best Brad Pitt movies.
Yes. What's your 5 favorite? We should have people post their top 5.
I know. I think people are going to push back on mine, but it's okay. They're mine.
That's right.
Todd's are different.
All right, guys, keep trucking. Be well.
Bye.
Bye-bye.